Ian, what's happening?
I think we found a group in an advanced state of intoxication. Is that reasonable to say?
Yes.
So we've got a group of three young men in pink miniskirts, tutus. They intermittently pause. They've gone into a quiet phase and they're about to go wild in a moment.
There's a dude playing the flute.
There's a dude playing a flute now?
It's like a recorder.
Everyone is saluting. There's a man with a traffic cone on his head. There's somebody dressed up in an Obelix from Asterix outfit. There's a tiger. There's a man dressed as a tiger behind him. There are two highly buff dudes in Speedos. AG2R is coming through in a team car. Out. And now they're losing their minds. Obelix is drumming. It's not a flute, it's a recorder. That's good. The man dressed as a tiger is very happy to be here. On the table they have... what are they drinking? Like regional liquors.
Yep.
Which they're mixing with Pepsi. There's a big roll of paper. I'm not sure what that's for. Some hoses. It's a scene.
I think actually it's worth noting that they're mostly French, which is actually, I know that sounds weird, we are in France, this is the Tour de France, but generally the loudest, craziest fans at the Tour are not. They're usually Dutch or Belgian or something else, but this is the French contingent.
Are you having a nice time, Johnny Long?
Yes, it's. I'm slightly worried about when the riders get up here, and I'm also worried if any of the people speaking out of the microphones eat the long length of sausage that's now just sitting out on the grill. I just worry for their bowels.
The man in the pink tutu is slowly turning the color of his tutu.
I think the man in the pink tutu is going to be throwing up pretty soon. And the helicopters are coming in. It's like something out of Apocalypse Now over the mountains.
The rich people arrive.
Maybe Macron. Emmanuel Macron is here.
Yeah, could be him.
We can dream. And now the ASO officials are coming up and... They're not stopping to wave out the window or smile. They are here on serious business, flanked by police.
Cycling club. The leaders, the ringleaders.
Why do you think that?
Because Obelix has helmet strapped tan lines, as do a couple of other guys.
And the guy with the tiger outfit, I don't know, we can't see his helmet straps.
He looks like a cyclist. He looks cyclist sized.
He's got the wiry build. Yeah. Wiry? Both. He's both. This tiger is both.
While the crowd sings songs, there's music in the background, there is an older gentleman with a t-shirt under his cap to keep the sun off, grey beard, and he's playing the recorder. But the problem is it's so loud, no one can probably hear but himself. But that's not stopping him. He's bobbing his head to keep in time. We saw him recently emerge from a hidden spot, holding his recorder and a roll of loo roll. So don't shake hands with him.
As he walked past, Johnny said, "That man's just taken his flute for a shit."
Gentlemen, we can hear the helicopters coming. Bike race is coming.
We can see the riders because we're looking down the valley and the road comes up towards the summit of the Tourmalet, but then it snakes all the way back round. So where we're standing with a lot of fans, it's actually the perfect place to not just see the bike race pass once and it's gone, but you get to see the whole snail and the trail of the mountain road.
People often ask us how you should go to the Tour de France if you wanted to go to the Tour de France as a tourist. You want to go here. You want to go to the top of a climb, particularly something like the Tourmalet. You're above tree line. You can see really far. You can see, we can see about 15 minutes, 10 minutes worth of racing below us. Big party up here. You know, hike up, because they actually don't let you ride if you leave too late. Show up early or hike up. Bring a bag, bring a big jacket, because it is about to start raining here probably. And have fun.
I would honestly bring a tent or a motorhome and come up 2 or 3 days early and book your good spot. You'll miss 2 days of the tour beforehand, but you're going to see about 10 seconds of the race, whereas here you'll see minutes of it. And also there's a party all every day, every night. It's amazing. This is what the tour is really about. It's not... This is it right here, crystallized. It looks like there are groups coming back together on the road. I think that what we're looking at right now might be the sort of remnants of that big breakaway group, the Alaphilippe group. And then maybe there's the Vingegaard, Pogacar, Sepp Kuss group as well. They're still quite far away. Oh, and just I'm looking left
That's
up the valley.
That's the break.
Yes, there's the break with all the cars behind and the helicopter above us.
You can see Wout van Aert on the front of the group pulling them along. Apparently he's been setting a monster pace up this climb and he's steadily been shedding people. He's lost Alaphilippe.
Is he just pissed off because people were saying that he's not as good as last year?
Yeah, he's just going to ride on the front every day to prove them wrong. But yeah, it looks like the satellite rider thing will work because he's pretty near the top now. I don't think the Vingegaard group's going to catch in that time. So then he'll be there for the descent and the short valley before the final climb. So today it looks like they've timed it right.
Moments away. What are you seeing, Ian Trelor?
We've got Wout van Aert on the front, along with Mikhail Kwiatkowski, James Shaw, Ruben Guerrero, and Tobias Johannesson from Uno X. Okay, so they're coming up to a hairpin about 300-400 meters from the top, about to round the hairpin, and they're going to come past our group here, which is the rowdy group on the road. They seem to have calmed down a little bit for the occasion, actually, but I expect it's about to get crazy.
People,
so there's no my cars. They've just come through a tunnel of noise about the width of a motorbike. There's flares going off, it smells, it's quite accurate. Flags waving. Someone almost got hit by a Shimano neutral service car. Helicopters overhead.
It's just constantly people almost getting hit. And jumping back and going, whoa!
And now we've got about 10 team cars coming. That was Paulus that just went past. He's just behind the group. He's got James Shaw, next group up the road.
And Vingegaard and Pogacar just went by us. just the two of them. All right, now we need to find an opportunity to switch sides, get back up over this hill. That was Julian Alaphilippe, as you could probably hear. Coming around the corner now is the group with Jai Hindley. Jai Hindley's been dropped by the Pikachu and Vingegaard group and is losing time to them, probably a minute and a half by this point. Quite a big group, around 20 riders here about to come through. This has been carnage on the Tourmalet. We weren't really fully expecting this. We just saw Skelmos getting heavily dropped, even off the back of Group Gadu and Jai Hindley. We see, wow, Thibaut Pinot was never really in the GC hunt here. That's not Pinot anyway. Ciccone was well off the back, so some of the others who we've seen perform well in the first week are either having a bit of a difficult day or they're, well, saving some energy in Ciccone's case. I think Skelmos is probably the one that surprised me the most there. And now we are going to book it back to the car, try to get out of here. Bob Jungels. And we have escaped. No pun intended. All right, we will be back. We'll be back from somewhere slightly less chaotic in a bit. I was going to do the full intro, but we don't need to do the full intro. We're now
at the Etna Pizzeria.
The Etna
in the Pyrenees. So figure that one out.
I've made a number of podcasts over the years in this particular pizzeria. It's in a little square in Po. We were staying in Po after the stage check. We stayed here the last couple nights. And we are now a couple hours after a extremely exciting and quite, an important stage, a stage that I think taught us a lot today, and I think that's what we're going to talk about here early in the show. Lots of color, lots of loudness, lots of vibes. We're going to bring it right on down.
If only out of pure embarrassment.
Primarily.
To a daily up late. A sultry evening listen.
Well, we're inside a restaurant. Normally, we try to record outside so we feel like we can just yell and be kind of like jackasses. But we're inside a restaurant, so we're going to put on our NPR voices.
Did we try to move outside, Kelly?
We did try to move outside.
Oh, that's interesting.
We were denied.
Ah.
There is a table out there, but it is the only table.
There is actually several more tables. I can see a bunch of enthusiastic smokers standing around one right now.
Yeah, but they're in the rain. The reasoning was that it was the only table, and so therefore, as the only table and as the only people asking for it, obviously we could not have it.
We're back in France, fellas.
All right, let's get into the bike race. So,
yeah.
Johnny, what happened?
The tour isn't over. Tadej Pogacar thought he might have to pack his suitcase up when he saw Jumbo-Visma hit the front on the Tourmalet. He was like, oh god, is it going to be the same as yesterday? But no, turns out he just got a Wout van Aert magic carpet ride to the final summit finish climb, and then attacked Jonas Vingegaard and scraped back, well, 24 seconds, I think, 24, 25 seconds, halved his deficit, basically. So now it is 24 or 5 seconds. It was like the stage was one number and GC is another number, which makes it confusing.
I'm looking it up. It is 24.
GC 24 and the stage was... Oh, no, stage was 24, GC was 25. So, yeah, the race is... Well, the race wasn't obviously over yesterday, but that's just like... That's what you're supposed to do with sports, is that it's disaster 1 minute, triumph the next. Like, yep. There's no point in getting annoyed with people. It's like it's called living in the moment, people, okay? Tadej Pogacar lost a minute yesterday. You're allowed to be sad that maybe Jumbo Visma were going to just absolutely dominate, but then today, Pogacar came back. Jai Hindley didn't have it today. I think maybe too much yesterday, and also just not at the level of those two, but he's still in third. And
he's in third with a sizable gap.
Yeah,
he has a nearly 2 minute gap on Simon Yates.
I'm hoping that by the second and third week we can start writing articles like Jai Hindley is even more third, because that would be good, because he's a nice guy, a great bike racer, and yesterday's stage, like, that was great.
Yeah,
and he achieved a childhood dream today and doesn't actually seem all that... No. I mean, I think he would have liked to have stayed in the yellow jersey a little bit longer, but within Bora Hansgrohe, and even in his reactions, it's kind of, oh, this was really nice that this happened. I'm happy it happened. That's great.
You can't withstand Vingegaard or Pogacar. There's no point in getting cross about it. It's like getting cross at, like, the weather or or your own mortality or, I don't know,
yeah,
your favourite TV show getting cancelled. It just is. These are facts of life, and... You might as well be... Someone last year described it as being the best of the humans.
Yeah.
And that's
which
also good.
20 years ago would have different connotations around it, but I think these days just means that those two are just a heck of a lot better than everybody else in the bike race. And so we kind of always knew there would be this race for third, and to be honest, Jai Hindley's little raid yesterday was just a brilliant piece of tactics to set him up for that particular fight. Like I said, he's got almost 2 minutes on Simon Yates. He's got... actually more than 2 minutes on Carlos Rodriguez. Adam Yates, same thing. Yeah, he's set himself up really, really well with a race that, you know, it suits him well. It's a climber's race. There's not a whole lot of time trialing. He tends to do really well in the last week of Grand Tours. I think if you're an Australian fan out there, if you're a Perth fan out there, I think you can be pretty confident that he has a good chance of hanging on to that position.
Well, why not go for another raid later in the race, especially if Wout van Aert has to leave because of the imminent birth of his child, or even without that, you know, Jumbo-Visma will have enough of Pogacar to deal with that. You know, that's what showed yesterday, is that the way to beat these guys is to just go for it and sneak into those massive breakaway moves. And if you're as small as Jai Hindley is, sometimes you can just sneak away in there, and then things work out.
They might think that he's wearing the green jersey. They might think he's a sprinter.
Stole my joke, Ian. I was about to say that.
That's
muscling in on my beat there, Kaylee.
Do you think Bora Hansgrohe saw what the green jersey changed? Well, they would have seen it at Paris-Nice, so then they're like, guys, for our Tour de France kit, let's just make it look similar.
I think so.
Another brilliant tactical move from the German masterminds.
Ralph Denk's moustache has all sorts of tactics hidden in there.
Secrets.
That and
a moustache full
of
secrets and gentle smiles.
I feel like all moustaches are full of secrets.
I don't think Ian's is.
Oh, I was about to say the opposite. If you get rid of this moustache, you see a big empty face. That's my secret.
Let's go back to Pogacar versus Vingegaard.
Yeah.
So, a couple interesting things to discuss here. First one for me. The tactics of Jumbo-Visma, I think, were quite interesting. I think they were basically a carbon copy of what they did on the Glibier and the Grenal last year, and also to some extent with the Hodacam. But the Glibier Grenal stage was the only real change was no Primoz Roglic throwing down attacks early on the equivalent of the Tourmalet, right? That's what he did on the Glibier last year. That's kind of what softened up Pogacar last year. There was no equivalent this year. All they had this year was Sepp Kuss setting a pretty difficult pace, but that's different than Primoz Roglic chucking attacks left and right what he was primarily doing is he was attacking in between the Telegraph and the Glibier, which is a sort of flatter bit of road. That means that covering those attacks is actually harder, there's, you know, more effective drafting, right? So Vingegaard could kind of save a bit more energy. It wasted a lot of energy for Pogacar. It was part of the brilliance of that stage last year. This year, not exactly the same route, obviously, different climbs entirely, but roughly the same idea. You get Wout van Aert up the road. You use his ability to get over these climbs in this magical way that he is able to do, despite being twice the size of everybody around him. You use that, and you catch him on the either sort of the last descent or in the valley or something. He pulls Vingegaard across to the final climb, and bada bing, bada boom, Vingegaard attacks, you win the stage. That was the idea, right? A couple major changes. One was no Roglic, but two, Tadej Pogacar has seen that movie before, right? Like, he knows what they're trying to do. In fact, a bunch of his quotes today really showed that he was thinking through their plan as they were executing it, right? And so he's kind of on the Tourmalet, like, okay, well, I know what they're about to do. They're about to chuck a bunch at me. All I have to do is hang on. If I hang on, he literally said this in his press conference, if I hang on, then I just get towed around by Wout van Aert when we catch him, and that's all I got to do. So that's a big change from last year.
With the benefit also that he got his fueling correct, which he didn't last year, and it wasn't an enormously bloody hot day.
No, it's been really cool, actually, already, or so far in the Tour de France, which is a pretty big change from last year. So yeah, some large, an attempt at the same plan, but different sort of scenario, different outcome, obviously, for Jumbo-Visma and for Tadej Pogacar. And I think that that's always interesting, because the other thing that Pogacar said in his press conference was, you can have plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way down through the alphabet, but this is bike racing, and it's very, very rare that any of those sort of like top plans actually end up working out. The fact that it worked out like it did on that stage last year is somewhat astounding. And what it was really down to, as much as the tactics, as much as you know, Roglic's attacks, it was just down to the fact that Jonas Vingegaard had better legs that day than Pogacar did. Pogacar cracked for the first time. I think it's the first time we've ever seen him crack. Today, very much the opposite. He knew it was coming. He could prepare for it. He could mentally prepare for it. He could fuel for it. He just knew he had to sit there. He said that he was sort of considering attacking earlier on. He thought about attacking on the Tourmalet. He had a radio in his ear saying, do not do that.
Yeah, that's a big difference as well to last year's. They're trying to temper him a bit and not just let him ride on vibes.
Yep.
Just be like, look, this is the Tour. They're good now.
Yep. You got to chill.
Don't. Yeah, you got to be smart now.
Yeah. And he waited. And he did say as well that maybe he could have gone earlier, but then he would have run the risk of blowing up and losing all that time. And I think maybe if he ends up losing this Tour, he might rue today, in that I do think if he'd gone a little bit earlier, he could have taken a little bit more time. Maybe that ends up being the difference at the end of this race. I don't know. But I think that he played it smart, and he played it. He knew enough about what Jumbo was about to do that he could play it intelligently. And I think that going forward, it sort of raises the question of, like, well, what else is Jumbo going to try then? Because they've essentially tried virtually the same tactic, made possible because of Wout van Aert's incredible skill set, a bunch of different times now, and I haven't seen much else.
Yeah, well, then it always comes down to who's the best bike rider in the race. And if you don't have that, then it's pretty hard to do it. The fact that Jumbo, I mean, last year, talking between Vingegaard and Pogacar, there wasn't necessarily that much. It was just that one day, really, that defined it. So yeah, the margins of that race are thin. So much so that the UAE bus after the stage, Matteo Trentin rolled in before he hadn't even seen the stage or the results. He knew that Pogacar had won, but didn't know what happened. And he was surprised to learn that there was actually a time gap at all.
Huh.
So I think that shows you what UAE were thinking going into the stage. And the fact that he managed to get 25 seconds at all is more than they were hoping for, I think you'd say. But the fact that Pogacar felt good enough to be thinking about attacking, yep, shows whatever happened yesterday was a blip, or maybe he's just started to ride himself into form or into like what he needs. Because I think this morning Giannetti said, the UAE team boss, that yesterday was his first really hard day of racing, and he probably needed that in the legs to then go on. And maybe that's why Jumbo have been hit them yesterday, hit them today, because they're like, we need to take advantage of when he's not on his top game.
Well, I think that's absolutely what they were thinking today. I think that if you'd asked him a couple of weeks ago whether today's stage would be key, they probably would have said no, if they're being honest with you. But I think that after yesterday, they're probably thinking the same thing everybody else is thinking, which is that if Pogacar has a weakness right now, we need to take advantage right now. Because if what Giannetti is saying is correct, and if, frankly, like Pogacar said the same thing, if that's correct and that he is going to maybe ride into form in the last week, then if you don't take time now, you're never going to get it, right? So I think that that's probably why they threw the kitchen sink at it today and why they were attacking on the Tourmalet. I mean, we kind of came into this morning stage and we're thinking potentially it was just going to be a bit of a dud from a GC perspective. Like, Tourmalet is so hard. Maybe it just ends up being a breakaway day where they kind of attack each other a couple times up to Cotteray and that's it. But no, they went ham from the bottom of the Tourmalet, which, like, let's not forget, last year's tour was so good and so dynamic because we had days like today. But in the last decade, this has been pretty unusual.
Yeah,
like in the sky years,
never.
Nobody's going full gas up the Tourmalet today. Absolutely nobody.
No.
Sky isn't, and because sky isn't, nobody else is even bothering to try. Right,
a guy like Hindley isn't sneaking away, getting himself in yellow.
No, like, which Geraint Thomas was saying on the podcast.
Oh, that, yeah, and on here, Geraint and Luke Rowe's podcast, they were talking about how in 10 years of racing the tour and winning it most years, never once did they let a guy like Hindley in his position on GC and his like ranking as like outside favorite ever get up the road. But then counterpoint, Adam Yates said this morning at the UAE bus before the stage that it wasn't like they're racing a bunch of farmers.
It's
factually
true.
Inaccurate because Yves Lampaert is the son of a farmer and does a lot of tractoring. But, you know, maybe that shows how the racing's changed and that Team Sky were feared and also just way overpowered against everyone else. But
I think Pogacar has changed the Tour de France.
Well, and I think the course takes a massive... should take a massive amount of gratitude for it, because to have this much GC action in the first week of the tour and the GC riders to actually attack it and not just be like, right, we're going to ride up this because we're all saving our bullets for later on, it's been unreal.
But I think there's a difference in the type of fear as well, because the fear that people had for Team Sky was kind of like almost like this tough paternal figure that could have cracked some heads together or something.
Yeah.
It was like, why bother?
Yeah, whereas UAE is kind of an unpredictable or Jumbo-Visma, like they're a younger, more sort of uncertain threat. So there is fear, but it's more a feeling that you need to, I don't know, be on the attack and not just letting yourself cower and be submissive.
Yeah, they didn't strangle the race in the same way. Like, you have Wout van Aert just like crushing the race under him up front, and that's how they want to race away from everyone else. They don't want to just like be the head of the procession. They're like, we're in a different race, so we're going to go and do that, and then you can all just like meet us at the finish.
Can I make a kind of bold statement right now? I think this is the best tour route I have ever covered. And granted, I am no Francois Thomazeau. Shout out, by the way, to Francois Thomazeau, who some of you may recognize from the cycling podcast. Today is his last day on the Tour de France. I think he's been doing it for 40-something years. I can't remember exactly how long. Francois is a legend. So he would have a lot more context on this than I would.
Good couple of days to finish on, though.
Good couple of days to finish on. But I have been doing this for over a decade now, and I've been watching the tour for far longer than that, and I cannot think of a route that was so finely tuned for regular action. And I think that the one of the major changes there is that the organizer they put these hard stages in, these important stages in, but then they've provided breaks.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that actually slows a race down, as much as like 5 sprint stages in a row slows the race down, the other thing that can slow a race down is if the riders get scared of the route that's coming, right? Of the climbs that are coming. If they're looking at a bunch of mountain stages stacked up and they're saying, I can't go hard today because I have to go hard tomorrow, that slows the race down. And because we've only had these kind of like pairs of hard stages, where we had the two hard stages in Basque Country, and then two rest, and then two hard stages in the Pyrenees, and we're about to have two rest days, basically two sprint stages. And then we have Puy de Dôme, and then we have an actual rest day. And then we go to Clermont-Ferrand, and then we, like, so it's going to keep doing this throughout the entire rest of the tour. The exception is there is a block of like 4 or 5 days, granted, with a rest day in the middle, in the Alps. But I think that is brilliant, and it's not something... I'm trying to think back to a tour that did the same thing. We've had like individual weeks that did the same thing, but I can't think of an entire Tour de France that has literally done this sort of like... I mean, it's how you build a narrative, right? You raise it and you lower it. Yeah. You raise it and you lower it. You raise it and you lower it. And by the time we get to the Alps, it's going to be at hopefully its absolute peak. And it's brilliant. It genuinely is. It's the best Tour de France route I think I have ever encountered.
It's only taken over 100 years for them to figure it out. But also, it's because if they're televised from the start, you can't just have a bunch of just flat and nothing happens every day. Like, you have to put these things in for... Doing it for the TV audience instead of newspapers or just general interest means that you have to design it to have that narrative, to have that excitement at the allotted times where then, you know, that's how the whole business and the economy of it all runs.
Feels like the first TV tour.
First TV tour.
Only
that's a good headline.
It's only been 50-something, 60-something, 70-something years since the Tour de France was put on television. But you're right. I think the sort of running stages from the start is relevant to that. But anyway, that's a bit of an aside. We were talking tactics and racing and things like that. But I do think that the ASO deserves some credit for the way that this race has gone so far. And obviously, the racers make the race as well.
Yeah, credit to the riders as well. If you design this course with a Chris Froome 20 whatever,
it wouldn't matter.
No.
Yeah. Well, or if you only had one of the two.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about this morning. It's like, well. Thank God we've got both of them.
Well, even Pogacar said that in his press conference. He said shit. A lot of the news outlets have pulled that word out for some reason. I don't really know why.
Oh, boo, that is.
You can't write shit. You can write shit. We say it on the podcast all the time. Anyway, he said. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically like shit. Like if the same thing happens today as happened yesterday, we might as well pack our bags.
Yeah,
that's what he said. And I think a lot of us were kind of feeling like that. A little bit deflated after yesterday. Like, oh, it's going to be, you know, one big day in the Tourmalet. It's going to be over tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Obviously not the case.
Well, you can only judge on what you see, can't you? You can be hopeful that Pogacar comes back, but you can only judge it on, like, Pogacar didn't look good yesterday. Vingegaard looked invincible.
Yep.
Great that it swung the other way. And on Sunday, Puy de Dôme Sunday, when it all falls apart again and one of them loses a minute, then we can... pretend that the sky's falling once more.
Christophe Morel has just sent a funny.
Sent a what?
He sent a joke.
I don't believe it for a second.
I mean, joke is relative. So there's a big WhatsApp group with all the media. And we mentioned this previously, but they send out photos of things that are left in the press room. Today.
Oh, great. Pair of sunglasses.
Pair of sunnies. Let's end this epic day with a famous found in the press room.
Okay, they're leaning into the... Because in the found in press room, they've put quotes around it. So are they leaning into this thing?
Did they listen to our podcast?
Well, I'm just saying that no one's ever like mentioned it before. It was just an administrative task.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think you've done?
Does Pierre Mugluck listen to this podcast?
He definitely does.
I hope he does. Hi, Pierre. But I think that you, the other day, you added an emoji.
Oh, yes, because...
beneath someone's backpack that had been left behind.
So the context
backpack?
Is...
No.
Yeah, it was the backpack was left behind somehow. Someone just forgot their backpack at a finish area. But the context is that in the Tour de France like media WhatsApp group, it's admins only can post. So it means...
And we are not that.
We're not that. It's only the ASO employees. It's the same with the teams. That's how their WhatsApp groups run. Then figured out that even if you can't type, you can emoji react to any message. So now, on the found glasses, in the space of... I mean, this is of no interest to anyone outside of us on the race. In 20 minutes, it's got 6 laugh, cry...
What emoji should I put on it?
I think it's time to pull out the big guns.
I think sunglass emoji, because then it's like...
Eggplant emoji.
I think... Oh.
I don't think we know Pierre quite well enough.
No, I feel like we're really on the precipice of a firm friendship, but that would just turn him the other way. I've gone with a sunglass face react emoji. Like I'm mirroring. Isn't that something that psychopaths do to make friends with people? They just mirror their personality and body language.
I've gone eyes.
The same. Even eyes. Okay.
Because they are sunglasses.
I do like it on WhatsApp when there's like a bunch of the emojis and then you get to flick through and just see who's done the different ones, even though it makes no difference to your life.
Well, there was just one emoji. There was just laughing cry emoji times six, and now there's... Yeah, or was it the other way around? No, six, was, yeah. Six laugh cry emojis, okay, and now we've got a sunglass emoji and an eye emoji.
We need to...
There are three reactions.
This segment is really about proof, to be a it's proof one. That we can't be super serious about bike racing for more than about 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah, we tried and the race deserved it, but now we are back onto our aforementioned bullshit.
I think I'm going to add an eggplant.
Is it time to move us on to our segment?
Yeah. Christoph Corner or...
Do we have a Christoph Corner Sabla today, or are you going to say it for another day? We've got a sprint day tomorrow, so we may need it then.
I have Christoph Corners up my sleeve, but I won't have a Christoph Corner today. I drifted over to the Uno X team bus today in the hope of adding a Christoph Corner up my sleeve, but actually they had a pretty good day. Their young climber, Tobias Johannesson, who... was the winner of the Tour de l'Avenir in 2021, so a pretty solid rider. But young guy, 23, 24, first Tour de France, first week of this, first race of this magnitude that he's ever done. Longest race he's ever been in is 10 days. Today he pulled out third on the stage, which is a massive result for Uno X.
Was he the fella going for climbing points throughout the day too? He got elbowed by a Movistar guy.
Oh, did he?
I just saw a video of this. Yeah. It was really quite rude.
That is quite rude.
Yeah, like if it had been a sprint finish, Movistar guy would have been relegated.
Yeah, no, he was a really, really nice, personable young guy, and he was very, very happy about his big day in the limelight. Couldn't have been happier with third on
him.
Stage.
Good for him.
I saw a gendarme on the Tourmalet while he's trying to push the crowd back, accidentally like get recoiled into Mikel Landa, who managed to stay upright, but Mikel Landa looked around and was not happy with him.
Not pleased. Gendarmes are the scary police.
No.
Yeah, gendarmes are scary
police.
Oh,
I'm talking about one of the blue ones, like the crowd control ones.
That's a lower level scary police.
There were scary police out on the climb. I'm
automatic
sure
weapon we, scary police?
Yeah, not yeah. automatic scary police, but they're not.
They're
not
like part of the army. The gendarmerie is like part of the like military service. Yeah.
These were like the middle tier ones who have the gloves with the carbon fiber knuckles for punching people.
There was also a conga line.
There was a very long one.
And there was a female gendarmer...
Res? I think they're all just gendarmes.
I think they're all just gendarmes. Yeah. Anyway, she was watching and making sure that the shenanigans did not get too shenanigan-y. And the conga line found her and tried to conga line with her, and she was not into it.
There was a very firm but fair no.
The leader of the Congo line, one of the three Frenchmen in like pink tutus who they brought their sound system and speaker and were like sort of in charge of the whole thing. He was at the front of the Congo line, had set it up, and they started going in between the crowds, at the side of the road, just snaking through. And the guy at the front accidentally kicked over a fan's beer. And the guy whose beer it was obviously was like, what the hell are you doing? And the pink tutu guy picked like the half spilled beer up and then just downed it in his face, which immediately neutralized the situation.
Diffused the situation.
Diffused it.
Yeah.
And there was just like patting on the back, like, yeah, fair enough. What else do you do in that situation? Segment, Maya Sable, or have you got something else first?
I was just going to mention the fact that Nielsen Palace is back in polka dots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good for you, Nielsen. I got a little bit of a profile coming on him the rest day. Maybe before that.
It's actually worked out perfectly for you because you thought you missed your
job. I missed my window. I managed to finagle a hotel sit down with Palace the other day, and then we got really busy and I didn't get a chance to finish the story. And then he lost polka dots.
But you did manage to, you were trying to put him in your fantasy team this morning, and it wouldn't let you switch it because we were discussing the car,
late.
And then it was too late.
Yep. It locked in with Rigoberto Urán, which was a terrible, terrible pick. Yep.
Yeah.
No, but let's get to the Maya Sable. So the... Who we got?
You're going to be guessing. So it works because Ian went first last night, so now you get to go first this night. And what I'm going to give you a choice of clues. So you can either have nationality, team, fun fact, serious fact.
Mm. Have you prepared these, or are these just off the top of your head?
Off the dome, brother.
Jeez.
Nationality first.
United States of America.
Giuseppe Coos.
Quinn Simmons.
Incorrect.
Giuseppe Coos.
Incorrect. Sebastian Coos. He's not that far down yet.
Sorry, Sebastian. I got that wrong.
We have to see what he prefers. Okay. team. Serious fact. Fun fact.
If we do team, then it'll be over. So give me a fun fact.
Correct, Kaylee. We are, of course, out here trying to entertain. Fun fact, he has two last names for both his first name and his surname.
Jeez.
This is also a good curveball because Americans think that loads of surnames are first names and it won't know the
Who are the other?
He's got two surnames.
Not Quinn, not Mateo, not...
I mean, any not first Kevin. Name can be a surname.
Not Kevin.
Play your cards right. Like, somebody tomorrow... There's probably someone called Vermarka in the world.
Vermarka.
What Americans am I
or
forgetting?
Kevin.
Not Lawson. Is it Lawson? That's not... Craddock isn't a first name.
Craddock isn't a first name, Johnny.
No, it's two last names. Two surnames.
What?
He's got two surnames.
Oh, did you say two surnames? Yeah. I thought he said two first names.
No, I'll have to check the record.
I don't understand what you're doing there, Johnny.
So Lawson Craddock.
Oh, maybe I messed it up. Yeah,
no,
Lawson
no,
Craddock.
I think I messed it up.
Okay, yeah.
All right, Lawson Craddock, I get a point.
Two surnames.
I'm going to the Olympics.
But I'm sure there's people with their surname Mateo as well. And then you've got Mateo Jorgensen too.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, Mateo is a first name. Like, Lawson.
Lawson could, it's very much a last name. Lawson, and Nigella Lawson.
Nigella.
Neither of you know
Nigella's
who Nigella
barely
Lawson
a first name. That's a type of fancy sesame seed. I don't know if you're proving
well,
your
correct,
point.
That's two zip to Kaylee to carry on the American theme. That's what you say when it's 2-0. Two zip.
Yep, two zip. Zip for you. Zip for
so
you.
Do I have to prepare tomorrow?
Should I go tell him in the morning?
Yeah, I think I think he'll be open to that.
I think I like Lawson a lot. I think he'll be into it. Yeah.
The serious fact was the broken hip in the tour. Ooh. So that would have been a dead giveaway.
Yeah. Yep, that would have been a giveaway.
But he is in 82nd place, moved up two places today.
Oh, good job.
1 hour, 1 minute, 34. I won't give away any of the people around.
No, because I've been purposely not looking so that we don't.
That's how this should work.
That's how this should work. Because tomorrow is going to be a sprint stage. He may retain it.
Well, I reckon there's going to be some, well, if you pardon the pun, sandbagging tomorrow to try and take it off him.
We shall see. All right, it is time to pop you all over to Jose Bain. Today, Jose is chatting about Luis. I should say Luis. He's not Louis. He's not French. Luis Ocaña. And she's talking wine because we're headed to Bordeaux tomorrow. Let's listen in.
Today we race from Mont-de-Marsan to Bordeaux. So we will absolutely talk wine later. There's even an entire wine museum in our Finnish town. But first, we celebrate an honorary inhabitant of Mont-de-Marsan. Luis Ocaña was the son of Spanish immigrants who settled in the department of Gier, in the Midi-Pyrénées. As a young rider, Ocaña had his first successes, and in 1963, when he was 18 years old, he moved to Mont-de-Marsan. The president of the local club had spotted Ocaña in the region. Thanks to his numerous wins in the amateur ranks, notably in the mountains and time trials, his opponents nicknamed him the Spaniard of Mont-de-Marsan. Ocaña turned pro in 1968 with Spanish team Fagor and chose to keep his original nationality. His first successes came the following year, and from 1970, when he won the Vuelta, he established himself as one of Eddy Merckx's main rivals. In the 1971 Tour de France, he truly established his legendary status. Ocaña managed to hold on to the yellow jersey despite endless attacks by Merckx. However, he was forced to abandon after a crash on the Col de Monti. Bad luck would follow him throughout his life, but the Spaniard from Mont-de-Marsan did eventually win the Tour de France in 1973. Sadly, for him, it's always mentioned that Merckx didn't start that year because he preferred the Giro and the Vuelta. Apparently, the tour organisers didn't really make Merckx feel all that welcome in France. Ocaña never reached the same heights again. His post-cycling career was marked by accidents, health problems, and financial difficulties that led him to take his own life in 1994. In today's Finnish town of Bordeaux, we find Cité du Vin, or Wine City. National Geographic ranks it up as one of the top museums in the world. If you want to see all the content on offer, you can spend up to 9 hours here, according to the website. Naturally, there is a glass of wine included in your visit. The museum is also very well suited to children. Being French, wine is part of the upbringing, I guess. We already learned that King Henry IV was baptized with wine on his little infant lips. The museum's website doesn't mention whether kids can also get the complimentary glass of wine or that it means double the fun for the parents. I reckon it's the latter. Pets, on the other hand, are forbidden. On the seventh floor, we have the Le Sept Restaurant, where they have a wine list of 500 bottles. You have a spectacular view on Bordeaux, and although it's not super bon marché or cheap, it's actually not that bad, says a Dutch person. Talking about money, one of the most expensive wines in the world is from the Bordeaux region. It's the world-renowned Château Lafite Rothschild. In November of 2010, the famed 1869 vintage sent ripples through the industry when a 750 milliliter bottle sold for $233,973 at a Sotheby's auction in Hong Kong. It surpassed its $8,000 estimate and set a new world record. To put things in perspective, that is a dizzying $29,000 a glass. That day, 2,000 bottles from the famed winery cellars were sold, totaling over $8.5 million. The record has since been broken by a wine from Burgundy, which sold for $500,000 for one bottle. Santé!
Let's head over to the Giro, where dun-dun-dun, Annemiek van Vleuten is winning everything.
You're joking. She won again.
She won again.
I reckon she's going to end up being pretty good, you know.
Good bet. Yeah. Maybe she'll win something before she retires.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed.
Let's hope so. Yeah. Well, let's get over to Abby and get an update from the Giro.
Today was stage 7, and it was another Annemiek van Vleuten day. She's just racking them up. She did say after the stage that the team's plan was to go for Leanna Lippert or Paolo Patino. If they were able to get in a break or get up the road, that they could go for the stage win. But if they weren't, that Annemiek could go do her thing on the final two climbs, and pretty much that's exactly what happened. And she rode away. She attacked first on the 6 kilometer long climb, got away with Juliette I always thought it was Labou because of French, but now I'm hearing it pronounced other ways.
I guess we just have to ask her.
I hate name pronunciations. I'm so bad at them. They're just the worst. So Juliette, Gaia Riolini, the three of them got away. They were chased closely by Mavi Garcia, and Niamh Fisher-Black was just kind of tailing off the end of that when Annemiek attacked the first time. And then she attacked again on the climb to the finish and soloed to victory. Juliette was 13 seconds back, Gaia 20 seconds back.
Nice. I was hoping for a breakaway day, but didn't get it.
Saturday.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. 102 victories now. I was thinking on my ride today, I was like, I wonder if like Van Vleuten's retiring, but she might just make a comeback every July. You know, she's like, okay, just I'll come back every July, just do the Giro and the Tour, and then just retire again.
within the conversation of whether or not she will actually retire, she looks like she's having so much fun still. Like, all of her post-race interviews, she's just smiling from ear to ear. She looks like she's having the time of her life.
Yeah, maybe that's because she kind of knows, like, I just need to have fun now. Like, this is my, I've got 6 months now, just, this is my job. And it's a great job. So she's probably just out there just having a great time. And she's won a lot of races. And I think it just shows that it doesn't matter how many races you've won, doesn't matter how old you are, how long you've been in the sport, you still get that buzz from just winning a race.
It's really a battle between kind of the top 10 shifting places at this point. Van Vleuten has almost 4 minutes on Juliet. And then Juliet has half a minute on Guy Riolini. And then it's another full minute down to Veronica Ewers in fourth. And Erica McNulty moved into fifth. There was a couple just shifts. Mavi Garcia lost 2 places, so she's in seventh. Nee Fisher-Black jumped up to eighth. And St. Esteban dropped to 10th. So just kind of some shuffling of the top 10 in the GC.
I really just want some breakaway days. And like Sardinia last year it was really nice. And I keep predicting it wrong though. It's so hard. This year I've struggled. Last year was pretty easy to predict. The stages were quite straightforward.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I do think the next two, there's very little place for any, neither stage will be for Lorena Wiebes because she went home ahead of the 7th stage to focus on the Tour de France Femme of Zwift. So no more victories from her at the Giro d'Auvergne, but I think that she can be happy with the victory, and then stage 6 is just amazing second place. But yeah, it could be tomorrow. Could be tomorrow. Saturday could be a breakaway. There's only one categorized climb. It's a Cat 3, 9.8 kilometers long, but averages 3%. So it's really like a gradual slog. It's not something that's going to break the peloton apart, and it's not close to the end enough that it's going to make a massive difference. Like, it might be a reduced sprint. It might finally be a Voss day, but I don't know. My gut tells me that the breakaway will take it.
Yeah, I think there could be potentially 2 breakaway days coming up. But maybe
it's been such a hard race so far this week that I think that a lot of people will be happy to let it be a breakaway day.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think Sunday could potentially be a... No, I mean, they're both very similar. They're both 126 kilometers with 1,600 meters of climbing. So they're really similar, but it's just how the elevation is over the stages are quite different.
Well, we'll talk about Sunday on Saturday,
yeah.
After stage 8. Hannah, thanks so much for your time. If you want more information on the Giro d'Auvergne or to hear some rider diaries from riders on the ground at the Giro, head on over to the Wheel Talk podcast feed for a chat with me, Hannah Barnes, and some audio diaries from Veronica Ewers herself, Nina Kessler of the Jayco Alula team, Nee Fisher-Black of SD Works, Sarah Roy from Canyon SRAM, and Loretta Hansen of Lidl Trek. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap up here. We're gonna finish our bottle of rosé and walk back in the rain to our hotel here in Po. Tomorrow, we head up towards Bordeaux. I can't wait. It's going to be finishing right in town. We're staying right in town on a Friday night. I think it's going to be an enjoyable evening for everybody.
We'll have another old friend / special guest tomorrow, won't we?
We will have another old friend / special guest tomorrow, which will be fantastic. Thanks to Sam, who came up and said hi. That was awesome. We've said this a million times. If you see us out here in France, you see us recording a podcast, you see us just wandering around, come up, say hi. We like it.
I did feel a bit bad because Sam came upon us just as we'd like sat down after hiking up the other side of the Tourmalet.
We
were like trying to prepare ourselves to podcast. So we were quite focused, but yeah.
Sam had to walk all the way up there.
Yeah.
Well, he was in
top spirits.
He was in top spirits.
Yeah, nice to see him.
Yeah. There was another guy draped in an American flag right in front of us who appeared to have some sort of terrible altitude sickness or possibly hangover.
That looks really rough. That looked really rough.
He didn't move for like the 3 hours we were up there.
Bottles of various liquids just like around him in some sort of...
Yeah, it was like, how many different types of electrolytes can I get into myself this afternoon? Yeah, it was not good. Yeah, not so good. Anyway, we will be back from Bordeaux tomorrow with a likely sprint stage. Actually, not likely. Like, pretty much guaranteed sprint stage. It's like a true transition stage tomorrow. It is so...
Big drive.
Big drive for us. But a beautiful finish. So we can't wait. And we will be back from some terrace somewhere in beautiful Bordeaux. Maybe with a Bordeaux. Drinking it. What do you guys think?
I could be persuaded.
Yeah.
I will have rosé. One rosé for me. The colder, the better.
Agreed. That's what I'll be going for.
Yeah.
Maybe in a bag. No, we're in France.
We're done. We're out of here. We will see you all tomorrow. Go to escapecollective.com/join and join.
Do it.
Yep. Lots of you are doing it right now, and we really do appreciate it.
The American equivalent of one gold coin. That's what it costs.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Well, British pound, one gold coin.
Oh, yeah. Pound
and remember, money isn't real. Since the 1970s, not real.
Yeah, it's just numbers in a ledger somewhere. So, you know, put one of those numbers in our ledger instead of
yours. And
you
can't take it with you.
No.
And I live a very frugal existence, so it won't be frittered away.
Bye, everybody.